Hey guys, welcome to episode 224 of the podcast with my guest Nicole Bloom. I want to get right into shout outs because I've been remiss and I got so many wonderful notes around the Thanksgiving time. I too like to give thanks around Thanksgiving, so I really appreciated being included in some people's things they were thankful for. If you told little me that I would get notes like that from people for Thanksgiving, I would have felt like my life was worth living in the future. So my 10-year-old self thanks you. My 20-year-old self thanks you. My 30-year-old self thanks you. I want to thank for your emails, your wonderful emails, Jack, JD, Roberto, Rhea, Writer's Block, Brandon, Beth, Steve, LM, and Nick. On Facebook, I want to thank Jamie, Aaron, Jake, Kevin, Sarah, Zach, Emma, and Allison. Thank you. I hope you enjoyed your holidays, everyone who was listening to this, and I hope you enjoy this episode. I am trying to think of things I should be letting you know about other than SF Sketchfest, which is one of the number one things on my mind. Very excited about that, and as you know by now, our lineup is announced, and tickets are on sale, and we're going to be announcing some additions in the very near future as well. So if you're thinking about coming out, I just hope you do. Okay, that's it. I hope you guys enjoy this episode, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Not that you have to issue a huge warning for MASH. I'm recording. So if you just keep your mic kind of near your, like as if you're doing a very casual yet very formal show on a stage. Do you do stand up at all?
No.
I don't either. So it's not like a, I'm not like, do you do, you don't do stand up? Shake my head disapprovingly.
Yeah. No, I've wanted to, but I feel like the structure for stand-up is really specific, and I've never been able to write in that way.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I guess it's kind of scared me off.
I find it very scary.
Yeah. I mean, I think if someone wrote my material, like how I get to do as an actor, like, I'd be down.
This is just my character. I do. Other people take care of it for me, but I go up and I present it.
Yeah. I would be down for that, but...
I definitely... I mean, I never even got so far into it that I even had like more than like 2 pages in a book. And for whatever reason, I would write down, cause it all became about speaking of, it became about playing a character that was myself as I saw my friends who were doing stand up doing it. I was like, oh, a stand up person writes funny thoughts down in a book. And so I would write a funny thought down, but I would feel like such a poser. I'd be like, I'm never going to say this out loud to anyone. Why am I doing
this?
That's
how I feel like it's like a whole nother level of like vulnerability that I shy away from because I actually am not, people think I'm comfortable in my skin, but I think that's why I like to act is because I get to hide behind a character. So like stand up is kind of the opposite of like why I act, I guess.
I totally understand that. Do you improv as well?
I love improv. Yeah.
Because that sort of allows for... whatever happens, happens, and it's still acting, and so it's not, you know, I don't have to write a bunch of material beforehand that I, you know, may or may not do well.
Yeah, especially at Groundlings, like more so than, well, I studied at UCB, and I was always getting the note of like, stop playing so many characters, and I was like, well, that's what I like to do.
That's funny. So I'm shocked that anyone would say that, because both those schools, I feel like, are so about like... fun big choices and character-y kind of stuff.
To me, maybe it was just the teachers I had at UCB, but they wanted me to just be myself and like focus on the game.
Oh, right.
In quotations. Yeah, yeah. Which I wasn't good at that. I didn't have fun with that. So I went over to Groundlings.
That's more, that's going to say that you're right. For those of you guys who don't know the game, because also the game is a movie that stars Michael Douglas from the 90s, early 2000s. But also it's like, I think, isn't the game like a book that some dude wrote, some misogynist dude wrote about how to like get women negging them by being like, that dress makes you look pretty. Like, i.e. you're not pretty, but dude, I'm telling you that dress does.
I've been looking into so many, like, sorry, this is tangent, but like self-help, like single female books.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
How to like lure a man. So
well, actually, yeah.
Maybe I should pick that one up.
If you want to turn the tables, I guess you could dive into that. It's just like, I remember it did make a big splash when it came out. I remember reading about it like in women's magazines that were like, look at this awful thing that this guy's doing. Because it really was just like not about human emotion at all. It was just about like, here's how to make a woman not be able to stop thinking about you. And it's a total power tripping kind of thing.
There's one also written by a female for women about how to get the guy to chase you. And I forget.
There you
it's
go.
Called The Rules.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
The Game and the Rules.
Yeah, the Game and the Rules. A little different.
I think
improv,
it's called. That's so funny though. It's like, but I like the idea that for women, it's like, here are the rules. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, dude, it's a game. It's cool.
Yeah, exactly.
I hate them both.
Yeah.
Speaking of tangents.
Yeah.
The game is like, the idea is sort of, you know, when you're doing improv, one of the things that particularly the UCB, and I think that comes from kind of Second City sort of world, mm-hmm. and the Improv Olympic, which is another school in Chicago, and a lot of you who've heard past guests who've gone through that program, that sort of all comes from the same place. And the idea is that you, when you're improvising, things, like I said, can kind of go all over the place. And they really want to focus on like, well, what's the scene about? Like, let's find a nugget that feels like it can kind of take us through the scene and sort of create kind of structure. And so there's a sort of game that you play. So an example would be like, if you and I were doing a scene and we didn't really know what it was about yet, but we were two women at a grocery store, and it turned out that like everything that you, like one thing happened where you make a choice to pick up a thing, and I like passive aggressively say like, oh, is that for you? It's very fattening. Then it would be like, oh, you sort of intuit that like, and it plays right. Well, and people laugh, and it's like, oh, Nicole and Janet sort of, without speaking, kind of understand like, oh, maybe the game of this scene will be everything that Nicole picks up, Janet will say something passive aggressive about
right,
her
and
choice.
And we heighten that.
There you
and
go.
It gets
and then
worse
you sort of
and
raise
worse.
It. Yeah. Yeah.
And you get more
like,
and more.
Oh, a pregnancy test. I don't know if you should be having children.
Yeah.
Like that's sort of be
see,
raising the game.
You're really good at the game. I in my head, I was like, how would I heighten that? I don't know.
Well, you're right that's very structural. And I think that's one of those things like, when for me it was kind of like learning a sport in that I kind of felt like it was too much to keep track of at once. It was a struggle initially because it was like, but wait, I want to be thinking about character and I want to think about groundingness and I want to think about being a human person even if I'm being silly.
Yeah.
But I also have to think about this like very structural, almost like writing on your feet thing. And that was that was tricky for me too first. And I think it definitely still comes out for me when I'm improvising is I'm like, oh, that scene wasn't about anything at all. That was just like a weird voice I got excited about.
That's what I like to do. And the thing at Groundlings that like resonated with me is that one of my teachers said like you could be doing, you know, a scene with someone, you share one detail and it's like instead of making it about like this formulaic thing, it's just like elaborating and like taking one detail and asking yourself, well, what does that mean? And like, what could that mean about the character or like that person's life? And so for me, that just resonates so much. Like that way of thinking is like really fun and exciting to me.
Do you feel like this is, and by the way, you don't have to have an answer to this and this becomes like me hyperanalyzing, but do you feel like you're more drawn to, as a person being entertained, do you think you're more drawn to character-based stuff to watch versus like a complicated plot? Like I would use Westworld as an example of like the characters and the acting is great, but it's very plot driven. It's very mystery driven. It's very twist driven versus a show like, I don't know, I'm trying to think, where it sort of feels like it's much more about like, who's this character and why are they doing this? And like, what's their relationship to this other person?
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, I watched all like Tracy Ullman growing up and I always loved like Mad TV, like Michael McDonald, his characters I always loved. And so, yeah.
Tracy Ullman's a great example because she's so, her characters are so over the top, but you feel for all of them somehow. You're like, that's a person. That's a person in there. I know that person.
Yeah, I love that kind of stuff. Yeah, I don't like Shakespeare, I think, for that reason. what's going on? I can't follow anything.
Did you have to study that when you're in school? Did you do did you do a theater program at USC?
I did do a theater program. We did like a semester of Shakespeare, but I remember when I was younger and I was really interested in acting, and my dad was like, oh, well, you should probably study Shakespeare. We'll send you to a Shakespeare camp. And I was like 12. And like, I at the time was like, I think I'm like, have some kind of talent as an actor. Like, this will be fun. And then I went and I got cast as like some like super menial role that came out like in the third act and had like two lines. And the teacher just like thought I sucked, and I felt like I sucked, and I like couldn't figure out like why I was so bad at it. And I think it just comes down to like, it just didn't resonate with me,
so
you know?
Specific. That's so specific. Yeah. It's almost like being forced to eat your vegetables. It's like, yeah. Oh, don't expose someone that early to something unless they have a real enthusiasm for it. Like, if you had if you had been like, I don't know, I'm really sparking to this. I'm a 12-year-old, but I'm really interested in Shakespeare. Then that would make sense, but it doesn't. That seems hardcore to sort of go acting equals Shakespeare.
Well, yeah, like, I mean, all the other kids there were like my age, but they were all like, they were on their shit. Like, they knew. I don't know. Like, I just remember feeling like so confused and like, yeah, it doesn't resonate with me.
Well, so. I mean, I think it's like, if you ever would have had the chance for it too, it might have been spoiled for you being kind of forced into it at a young age.
Yeah, that was like a bad first introduction. Yeah. Maybe as an adult now.
Because I could see you doing something like, this is how well I know, by the way, Shakespeare. What about Much Ado About Nothing?
Oh, I don't know.
A comedy where it's like, you know, Kenneth Branagh and Emma Thompson did a version of it that was a movie that was really funny, and you really got a sense of the characters, and there's like a lot of really funny side characters.
Oh.
So the comedies are pretty fun, but like...
Nice. I'll have to watch that.
You might get a kick at it. What am I trying to convert you now? Yeah. Like, I love Shakespeare. I do like Shakespeare, but I also am not like, I have friends who belong to theater companies now who work and do, you know, film and television stuff. And then they feel like they really get their emotional grounding from going and doing a beautiful Shakespeare play. And I clearly am not drawn to that, because otherwise I would probably pursue that more. So I'm definitely not the person who's like, you're an asshole if you don't want to do Shakespeare all the time.
You're a dipshit. Yeah.
Again, like if I had gone to Shakespeare camp when I was 12, I probably would have been into it. But God, there are so many things that I could have been sent to do at that age that I would have been like, what?
Yeah.
This isn't what I meant, you guys. You know?
Oh, yeah. Thanks for understanding.
Did you do any kind of improv-y kind of stuff before college? Were you a goofball with your friends and stuff? Did you do funny voices and stuff? Because you mentioned the stuff you liked watching.
Yeah, I was. And I mean, I took some improv classes as a kid at Second City. And
where
like,
was this? Here?
Yeah, in L.A.
Are you an L.A. native?
I grew up in Northern California, and I started acting and going to acting school in like San Francisco, and then I was like, Mom, Dad, I need an agent, and then they helped me move to L.A., which I was really lucky. They were so supportive.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, and then I started taking all kinds of classes down here, and the one thing that I noticed was like, because as a kid, I was always like really shy, I noticed that my improv, like, it varied so greatly on if it was good or bad based on how like comfortable I felt within the group. And I still find that to be so true.
Sure.
Like if I'm, you know, playing with people who I feel uncomfortable around or like I'm insecure, absolutely, it's just the worst.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's a great example of that sort of mirror that weirdly showbiz can kind of hold up to real life, which is, isn't that basically true of anyone? Like, isn't that sort of true in a party environment, or for us more, you know, just for those of us who don't do it for a living, even just being in a work environment where you feel like I don't feel like I'm in a safe place where I can talk about my ideas. So I then feel like I'm a shitty worker bee, or I'm a shitty designer, or I'm a shitty this. And I do feel like that's one of the cool things that improv constantly reminds me of, which is that idea of like, you're only as good as your weakest link sort of thing. It's like, I like that idea of having to lift up, you know, the team sort of lifts itself up in anything, you know, whether it's performing or not, versus like, you want to be the best at something because you really want to stand out and make everyone else look bad. You know?
Yeah, but I guess like that really didn't click for me until like even a few years ago. Like I was always just like, wow, why am I like really like funny sometimes? And other times it's like, I feel like I'm just falling on my face. And like, of course, everyone has those experiences, but even taking classic groundlings, like I had a couple teachers in like classes that I was in where I just felt like the black sheep or something. And I was like, wow, this isn't going well. But like the class I took right before this, right. I felt like amazing.
How confusing.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like, that's
I'm
been
glad
a big
you
lesson.
Stuck with it though, right? I mean, that's because I think it would be easy too for someone to go, oh, I guess I was wrong or I've lost it. You know, we kind of go through those phases where we're like, oh, I guess this voice inside of me that's scared is really the loudest, most correct voice. And I need to listen to that one and not listen to the drive in me that thinks, wait a minute, though, I think there's something here. I want to do that, you know?
Yeah, I guess I'm sure all performers have had those moments. I mean, I've been like laughed at by agents who I've auditioned for. Like,
are you serious?
Like, yeah, I mean, okay, you haven't had experiences like that.
Well, I've never had to audition for an agent, but I'm sure I've had auditions where I've got, I mean, like for casting agents, where I'm sure casting directors, I've walked out of the room and they've been like, hey, yay.
It's just, it's like really crazy like to experience that as an adolescent. When you like don't have a strong sense of yourself yet.
Yeah, sorry, you and I were talking about
that before. I don't know why we got on
before.
Such a downer of a subject.
No, I think just because you're talking about vulnerabilities doesn't make it a downer. I think it's encouraging, again, to face that stuff and push through it. I mean, that's because the easiest thing to do is go, well, that was humiliating. I'm never going to do this again.
Yeah.
And that's something that we all go through. Like, that's the hardest thing. So I think it's super impressive. And we were talking about this a little before we started recording that my point is, if I had had those experiences like you, and thank God you pushed through because you're on a show and you've worked and, you know, that's how we met. I feel I would have stopped. I was so timid that I just would have been like, oh, I'm terrible. And I just would never have pushed through. And so I think it's incredibly courageous when someone goes, yeah, you know what? I'm not for everybody.
Yeah.
I'm not like, I'm special. And that in and of itself means not everyone is going to be like, you're my favorite. Like,
right.
There can only be so many Tom Hanks in the world. That's why when I say Tom Hanks is an example, everyone nods their head because there aren't 50 of those.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm definitely thankful for those experiences.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you have siblings?
Yeah, I have an older brother.
And were you in San Francisco proper, or were you in?
Suburbs, these suburbs, Livermore, Fremont. Mm-hmm. I was born in San Jose. I moved around a little bit as a kid. So.
Yeah, where were you moving around? If you don't mind my asking.
Oh, good question. Honestly.
Can we pause this time and make a couple of calls and see if I can get to the bottom?
No,
of this?
I don't know. I think my parents, this is. Wow, I didn't expect to be talking about this. My parents, I think, like, they, I feel like a lot of people are, like, born into families that are already, like, very comfortable. But I just remember as a kid, like, we weren't poor, but my parents were always, like, trying to, like, kind of, like, grow
what's
themselves
the
financially, whatever. Their careers. And so I kind of grew up through that. And, like, we would just move because, I don't know, to get like a new house or we could afford a better house in this neighborhood. So.
Right. Well, no, listen.
So like no reason in particular, I guess, just that my parents were like growing in themselves and.
And that's also maybe stuff they're not necessarily going to walk you through as a child. They might be having conversations about their goals and how to meet them, but they're not going to like sit you down and be like, all right, listen, this is our checkbook statement.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, but I have ideas. But.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
What's your ethnic background, if you don't mind my asking?
My mom is Japanese, so she's from Japan. She's very traditional.
Born in Japan.
Right after like World War II. So she's like super conservative. And my dad is from California. He's like Irish Catholic background.
How did they meet?
They met in Oregon. They won't really tell me the story.
Oh,
they're very vague about
it.
I think it was at a bar. I'm not really sure.
They're like, we really got to come up with a better story. This is just so casual sounding.
Yeah. Every time I ask my mom, she's like, I don't want to talk about it. I'm like, okay.
Funny.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
She's like a very like old Japanese person. And I don't just mean in her age, but just like her points of view about stuff. So it's been interesting like growing up with that and then coming to LA and going to college out here and like just it's like such a clash sometimes with like the values I was brought up with.
Sure. And, but you said that they were supportive when you came down. So it like that, you know, it wasn't like your parents were like, absolutely not.
No. This and and every time I book a job, they're like so happy for me. Like, I don't mean in that way, just like, I mean, my mom is like a woman and she taught me kind of like Japanese values for like women. And that doesn't always imply that you like ask for things or you, you know, you don't want to really like stand out.
Such a different culture.
Yeah.
My experience in Japan was exactly what I sort of expected, in the sense that anything that I had known, that I'd come to know about Japanese culture rudimentarily or whatever, just from being in Japantown, and there's a bit larger Japanese community in San Francisco, and sort of working, I worked for a store where we worked with a lot of Japanese kind of importers or Japanese artisans. And so whatever my limited experience was, much more so than just like seeing something on television, but I definitely felt like, I felt that in Japan, and some of it was wonderful. Like, this idea of being of service is something that is so different in Japanese culture, and I love that there's an honor to that, and I loved, because I worked in retail, and I I really was like, I don't feel that you're better than me, but I do feel like my job is to be of service to you in this environment, and that doesn't demean me. Do you know what I mean? And I really felt that in Japan, but I definitely felt a difference in the way women would or wouldn't meet my eyes. You know, I'm this American who's just like happy to be there and smiling and making like meaningful eye contact and baring my fangs at everyone and like a positive, you know, and there really was more sort of this like, why is she looking at me? Why is she meeting my eyes? Like, we don't do that, you know?
How long were you there for?
I was only there for a couple of weeks, but
okay.
I just felt, I felt a difference and I felt like a big puppy dog who was like, hey everybody.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. They're like slow to warm up to people, I guess. And that's, I don't know. There's like so many little things where as an adult now I'm like, oh, it's okay for me to like, you know, be a little loud or like voice my opinions on things or ask for stuff.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's been a process like learning that too.
Did you have a community, like a Japanese community that she was a part of, or were you guys just kind of in the sort of cultural mainstream?
I had one Japanese friend growing up, but I've never, I know a lot of like Asian people who like kind of like to, I don't want to say isolate themselves, but like there's a whole like Asian American community of actors, obviously. And like, even in college, like, you know, there's like Asian frats or sororities. And like for myself, it's not that I'd like deny that part of my heritage or culture. I feel very like Japanese, but I just find it like limiting to like super like immerse yourself and like being in that one like group of people, and like especially as an actor, like
you're interested in people and characters and personalities, so I could see you being drawn to like as much of a melting pot as you could be, perhaps.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. What was your high school like? What was it, a public school?
I went to high school, so I had moved to LA and I started.
So you really
sophomore.
Were that young. You were like, I know I want to do this. I got to get down there.
Yeah.
And did they come with you?
Yeah, they came. Okay. Okay. Like the whole family moved.
In my mind, I was imagining you finished high school and then were like, I'm going to LA. And they supported that. But wow, they really came down with you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Did your brother go too?
My brother, he started going to USC, so we all, like, moved at the same time, basically.
Gotcha.
And I started as a sophomore. My parents moved to Simi Valley, which is, like, this little suburb right outside of LA, and I went to high school at Santa Susana High. It was a performing arts high school, yeah, I wasn't really involved in, like, the theater there even, because I was so focused on getting an agent and, like, auditioning outside of school. Like, I just knew that that's what I wanted.
That's great.
I was like, I'm not going to bother with these school plays.
I got my sights set higher,
I've got
everybody.
My on-camera acting class to go to.
Do you feel a pull when you're, like... When you do, and then you went to USC and you studied theater, do you enjoy, I mean, the onstage experience of being in comedy, particularly improv, is very different in my experience from being in a play. And that in turn is very different from being on screen and being like in front of cameras and having that kind of production day. Did you ever have a time where doing just like a play every night for a few nights, in whether it was in college or not, did you have that, and did that did you enjoy that? Because they're okay, very
so
different.
I didn't. My my theater professors at USC were. I don't want to like say anything bad, but I don't think I was like ever like a favorite, and I never got cast in any of the plays. Like I was always auditioning outside of school, and that wasn't actually supported really because they were like, well, if you book a job and you know, what are you just going to drop out? So they never cast me. I don't know. Maybe that's just an excuse I'm making up. Maybe I just sucked. Who knows?
Well, were you, how was the work side of things going?
It wasn't going great at all. No, but I was always auditioning, and like, I would like book commercials here and there and like have little gigs, I guess.
Did you feel like you got pigeonholed? I'm thinking back to like mm-hmm. my friend Lynn Chen has done the podcast. I'm thinking, or like, someone like Susie Nakamura. I'm trying to think of friends of mine who are Asian who, mm-hmm. experienced like, and some moments feel like they experience a benefit of being sort of a rare gem yeah. in the comedy world, and other times feeling like, I feel like this is a part that anyone could do, and yet it will go to a Caucasian person who's not. Do you feel like you were, I don't want to say hurt, but like, do you feel that the business kind of was like, what do we do with you?
Oh, yeah, that's like precisely what happened, especially because yeah. I'm half Asian, and like, I used to have like long dark hair, and this like I had this like manager who was a total hack who will remain nameless, but she was just like, you should be hot, like blah 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 blah, like she just like wanted to make me into this like cookie cutter like quote unquote hot Asian girl, which I like wasn't, and I just, yeah, again, I was really young, like I didn't know what my strong suit was necessarily. It was kind of like throwing spaghetti at the wall and just seeing what stuck. But also like I wasn't like the nerdy Asian girl, and I wasn't like the hot white girl, so it's kind of like what am I? I mean, even still now it's like what am I? But I've gotten lucky enough to like find roles and people who are accepting and like open-minded enough to be like, "Oh yeah, it's okay that you like don't look like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyone in particular, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah. I hope that, I do hope that it continues in that direction. Because I definitely, when you think about, I mean, I don't know, like for most of us, I think we look around at our friends, and then we don't like look on TV at, I might as well use Friends since that was a long running example and it's called Friends.
Yeah.
You don't, like, I don't know that many of us look around and go like, those, yep, that's it. Yeah. They all look like that. Like yeah. that's who my friends, you know what I mean? Yeah. And so having that diversity, I think is great. I feel like British television, I notice the diversity less, which means they have been doing it longer and better.
I agree.
Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think about a mixed race couple on a British show until I realize that I've been watching a show for two seasons and I'm like, oh my God, I just realized.
Yeah.
Like, he's black and she's Caucasian. Yeah. And it does not, I accepted it immediately. Whereas sometimes with American television, I feel like, not always, but I still feel like there's this sort of like self-consciousness about diversity casting where you're like, I don't know why I'm noticing. I don't think it's me. Like, there's something going on here that's making me notice this in a way that I wouldn't otherwise. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, because I mean, I just speak from my own experiences, but like most of the time when I audition for TV and it's, say, it's like about a group or like a film, whatever, it could be about a group of like four girls who are friends, and like, it's just, it's always like the Caucasian girl is like the lead, and then like her minions are like the you know, the ethnic people who like fill in the holes.
So right.
You're
really right.
Yeah. Like, it's just, it, that hasn't changed much. But actually, I think Superstore like is a great example of.
And that's, you know, the show that you're on.
Yeah. The show that I'm on.
Tell us about
so
it.
So proud
Let's get
of.
Get it out there.
It's on NBC. It's a half hour comedy. And I mean, I just like, I think our creators are so awesome because they chose people based on their abilities and like how well they fit the characters. You know, America Ferrera is obviously like Hispanic, and like that role wasn't written for a Hispanic woman necessarily. It was nice. Just like supposed to be the female love interest of the show. And so I don't know, I just think it's great. And I remember like auditioning for my role, which at the time of the pilot, it was like a 17-year-old pregnant teenager in Missouri, right? So I remember thinking like, oh, there's no way I'm going to book this. Like, I don't look like what America probably thinks of a 17-year-old teenager from Missouri looking like as a half Japanese girl.
Right.
And so every step of the way when I got a call back, I was like, oh, they really mean this to like
is this really my appointment? Like maybe the assistant messed up. I don't know. I'm still like pinch myself because it's such an awesome opportunity.
Yeah. Who else is in the cast? It's Mark McKinney.
Mark McKinney, America. Me, Colton Dunn.
Colton, I love so Colton funny. Dunn. He's Have also you met wonderful. Him? Yeah. We work together. Well, we know each other from the UCB world.
Oh, of course.
And I've done Key and Peele, and he wrote on Key and Peele, and then we also were. He was on Burning Love with me, so we.
Oh,
I love him. Yeah.
Yeah. So you.
He's a star. Yeah.
Yeah. He's.
Yeah, because
so
I remember
funny.
The reason I asked you to reiterate is that was one of those billboards where I was like, oh my god, I know almost all of those people. Like this is going to be an amazing show.
Yeah. And Lauren Ash, who I don't know if you'd be familiar with.
I know Lauren.
I don't.
Yeah. Improv. Yeah. I don't know her personally, but I think she's great. I'll have to have her on the podcast.
Yeah. She's hilarious. And Nico Santos, who's actually a stand-up.
Yes. I mean, listen to that. That's a cat. Yeah. And also, like, that's a great representation of, like, who's, like, working blue-collar in America.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean? So that's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah.
Usually, I don't even talk about current projects, by the way. So know I'm enthusiastic because I'm like, I got to talk about this right now. So let me ask you this. How did... romance kind of fit into you, because you sound like you're very driven, and if you felt like you were more interested in kind of the outside of school stuff, did you feel kind of distant from everything that was happening in your high school, or did you have great relationships and friendships while you were still kind of being very focused on auditioning and stuff?
No, the answer is no, I didn't. Like, in hindsight, like, I think I was, like, so ambitious and probably, like, a little, like, socially inept. Like, I did have friends in high school. Like, one of my best friends today is even, I met her in high school and, like, we hang out all the time. She's amazing. But I didn't ever go to parties. I didn't go to proms. Like, I didn't date. I was afraid of boys. I didn't have like a big social life in high school.
What did you do? What did you get excited about doing that wasn't kind of in pursuit of the dream? Did you, or maybe even just watching TV and stuff was, but did you like read? Were you a music fan?
I have a really bad memory, so it's hard for me to like, sometimes I'll be like, what did I do on the weekends in high school? Because I didn't party and like I didn't really hang out with people. Like on occasion I would. I was really into music though. I remember like discovering like emo when I was 16 and being really
into
that.
That can be very all-consuming and it's something you can enjoy completely by yourself like when doing other things too.
Oh my god, I sound like such a loner.
No.
I wasn't a total loner, but
were you into any sports or anything? Not through
school,
but
I did ballet when I was younger, but I kind of like stopped. There wasn't a studio where I in Simi Valley, so I didn't really continue that. It was just about auditioning. Oh, an acting class, obviously. I was always in class or doing some kind of improv thing. So those were really like the things that took over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you, and when did you start dating in college?
Yeah. I met my like first boyfriend like my last year of college. I graduated a year early, so I was like a junior.
Was there any part of you that was like, oh, I see what this is about? I was ready when I was ready. You know what I mean?
No, I always wanted. No, it's not like I didn't like boys. Like I definitely did. It was almost to my detriment that like I was like so. Not interested, but like I just didn't know how to go about it. And like my mom, obviously being Japanese, like
I mean, I think that's a huge part of it.
Yeah, right? I don't know how people date over there, but like I just didn't know how to flirt. Like I just remember there's this boy in one of my acting classes when I was like 15, and I liked him so much, and like I just couldn't talk to him. And probably a lot of people have that experience. But yeah, every guy I was interested in, like I just could not talk to.
Did you have boys who liked you that you were like friends with that you were like, ugh, why can't it be the guy that I really like that likes
me? Oh, no, I have that a lot like lately. Now that I'm like finally in my mid-20s and like actually like dating around, now I find that happens sometimes, but that's okay.
Yeah. Well, if you're in a position now where you can kind of speak your mind more, then at least it doesn't feel like you're getting input, but you can't. I don't want to say out. That's really not what I'm saying.
Yeah, that's not what you mean.
But the idea that you
No,
could, you know.
Now my problem is that I like chase after the wrong guys.
Do you?
Yeah.
What's your dad like?
My dad, what's he like?
He's pretty silly. I don't know. He's
my dad's really silly too. Yeah. I feel like that's where I got a lot of my silliness.
Same. My parents, like, now that I can, you know, I can like see them for who they are now that I'm an adult and I'm like removed from them.
Isn't that kind of a wonderful relief?
It is.
I'm starting to really get perspective on this person as a human. Yes. Instead of just my boss or like someone who kept me from stuff or is, you know.
Yeah, and I can see now, like, they both have, like, such a great sense of humor. Like, they're both so silly, so goofy without even knowing it, probably. I love that. Especially my mom. Like, she probably has no clue, but yeah, they're both, they have great senses of humor. So I'm sure that's where I got it from.
Nice. I got to get back to this emo thing for a second.
Okay.
What kind of music did you like when you talk emo? What were you getting into?
I was really into, I'm embarrassed to admit this, Panic at the Disco.
Okay.
Which I still like occasionally listen to.
Yeah. There's a real like generation of Smiths inspired kind of like emo-y sort
I
of
love
stuff.
The Smiths. That, yeah, didn't get into them until college.
Yeah,
Taking Back Sunday and
God, do I mean, I mean
My Chemical Romance.
Sure.
Love those bands.
They're still going strong.
Yeah, those are like the main ones, I think.
Did you feel like they get? Like, did you have a feeling of, because you were kind of a little bit more of a loner, even if it's by choice? Because a lot of that music is kind of about being a loner by choice.
Yeah,
it's like, I'm not understood, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I'm just going to write my poetry.
I don't know if that's what it was that resonated with me. I think maybe it was just like the super emotional aspect of it. Like, I just like love that. And then I got into like more like indie music when I was like, oh, that's not cool to listen to.
Oh,
and then
did you feel like it wasn't cool?
I mean, even now I'm kind of like, oh, that's like, it's like just silly, I guess.
No.
I was friends with this one girl in high school who was like just so like cooler than thou. And like, I remember telling her that I love the Killers and she was kind of like embarrassed for me. Like, she was like that girl.
Oh, stop. The Killers are like that. First of all, that's not emo, is it?
No, it's like, not. It's like alternative, more, yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Well, what does she think is cool? Get her on the phone.
So she introduced me to a lot of cool bands that actually I like still love, like Broken Social Scene. And
yeah. Okay.
You know,
well, that's
Jose
indie.
Gonzalez.
Jose Gonzalez.
For a 17-year-old, it's just, yeah, you like are like, oh my God, like,
well, let me tell you something right now. I have a mix that I listen, and I do call it a mix, not a playlist.
Nice.
I have a mix on my iPhone that I listen to when I go biking, and I have like 3 Killer songs and I have like 8 Jose Gonzalez songs.
So, oh, interesting.
Your friend can eat it.
Yeah. Oh no, she can definitely eat it. I mean, yeah. She turned out to be like a bitch and like not a great person. But like, you know, when you're like 16 and you know no better, she was like the older sister who was just like, yeah.
You don't want to do that. This is for your own good. You need to listen to this instead.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things I think I'm definitely older than you, but as I've gotten older, I have a lot of affection for stuff that I went through a period that I was afraid to admit I liked. And there's something so freeing about being like, yeah, I loved him. Like, I was listening to James Taylor at the same time I was listening to The Cure, as the same time I was listening to Run DMC or whatever. Yeah, and it'd be like, and that's who I was. And I was quirky. Whereas there is definitely a period of time where I was like, I don't know. I kind of regret being that, you know, being so into that.
Like, I think I'm like about? On the verge of that, because to this day, I'll tell people I like Panic at the Disco and I still like get some looks. And
I give
like,
it 5 more years and then you're going loud and proud at the Disco show. And all these other people are going to be like, we were so cool. And like high five each other.
Thank you.
Everything comes back around.
Yeah.
Do you play any musical instruments?
I played piano growing up. Again, Japanese mother pushed me into that. She's upset that I don't practice anymore. I just don't enjoy it, which is sad because I do love music. And like when I learn a song, I love playing it. But it's like that process of reading the music and like it's just really tedious. So I should probably sit down and try, but I'm bad at it.
No, I get it. And I think that's another thing where I don't know where the age thing kind of kicks back in, where certainly there are people who get to an age where they're like, God, I feel I would love it if I had just stuck with it. Mm-hmm. And I just don't know. I'm not a big one for regrets. I think that's, you know, unless it's about something that you hurt someone else and obviously you learn from it and you don't want to hurt them again. But in terms of something like that, where you're like, for someone to be like, oh, I never should have given up the piano when I was little. It's like, dude, you can still go play the piano. I understand that you now feel like it could have been more important to you, but the fact of the matter is it wasn't. So when you're 12, 13 years old, when you're 9 years old, when you're 16, 17, 18 years old, most of us aren't thinking, I hate this now, but I'm just going to stay with it because 40-year-old me is going to be really glad I did. I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, like, if you enjoyed it, you enjoyed it. And there are people who, you know, yeah. like, most, like, I have two guitars that are sitting there collecting dust, and probably more, I have more than that elsewhere. Wow. And, like, I when I feel like playing them, I'll play them, but I don't. But my friends who love noodling around on guitars, they're not making themselves pick up their guitar. And yeah. we're different. And we both know how to play, yeah. but they have a different relationship to it, you know? And there yeah. might be a point where all of a sudden you're like, I kind of want to play piano again. And all of those things are still there. You know what I mean? All of those things. Like, yeah. you might be a little rusty, but you could start. But I feel like don't start again until you feel like, I'd really like to do this, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that, their support on that.
Dude, I will wear a button that says that if it will make you feel even more supported. Okay, I'm gonna get into the Smash game. The first one I'm gonna do is this one definitely makes sense to me because of the conversation we just had about music, which is imagine, give me three, you know, with Smash you'll end up with one eventually, but give me three bands. And I want you to feel very free to say whatever you want. Okay. No judgment. This is not a judgy group of listeners.
Yeah.
That you wish you could sort of magically either be transported to the show, or they could almost just like appear somewhere and like play you a song for like just you.
Oh my gosh. Any band, like anyone, current,
living,
past.
Dead.
Okay. Let's put down the Smiths.
Great.
Modest Mouse, because I always nice. Wanted to see them perform.
Nice.
And then down Jeremiah.
Great. Own it. I love it. I absolutely love it. Okay. Let's do three vacation homes somewhere, anywhere in the world, and imagine that getting there isn't like a hassle.
Oh, okay. Easy. Hawaii was great. Just there. Love it. Japan, because that's like my second favorite place.
Awesome.
And I'm going to put Fiji, which might be redundant, but I love tropical islands and I've never been. So
that's your vacation home. You get to decide. Yeah. How many have you been to Japan with your mom to mm-hmm. visit family?
Yeah,
and stuff?
Lots of times.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool. How yeah. early on did you start going?
Oh, since I was a baby.
Oh,
yeah.
That's so cool. Yeah. Where is her family based?
Her family's in Nagoya, which is about 2 hours away from Tokyo.
Okay.
And they're all so old now, and so we don't really stay with her family anymore. Like in the last few years, we've just gone to Tokyo to like play around and like see her friends and stuff. So,
yeah.
Yeah. It's
That's
nice.
Great to be, to remain that connected.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love Japan. I would love to go more often. Yeah. It's not like a place. If I had a reason to go more, I would. It's yeah. more, it's definitely more like this is a huge vacation thing. Like let's spend a lot of money and go
oh,
to Japan.
Yeah.
But
yeah. Like, There's not, I haven't experienced a lot besides like just like socializing with family and friends while I'm there and then like shopping and eating. Like,
yeah.
I'd like to see more of their nature and like do more things oriented to that, but I haven't had the opportunity.
Have you gone to other places besides her hometown yeah. in Tokyo? Like,
I've been to Kyoto, but again, we don't really like veer that far off because, yeah, the people that we know are in those two areas.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've had like friends visit who have been like more places than I have just because they're like, you know, they want to like
tourists
see everything.
And they're going, they're
yeah, yeah, but I would like that experience as well. So
is that something you would ever do with your mom, or is that more of like, I think that's going to have to be a thing I do just with a friend or a boyfriend or as an
I
adult.
I think it'd be really fun to go with friends because I've never been like clubbing, which I think would be so fun to do.
I'm sure it's like a
that.
Whole other
yeah.
world. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I like hiking and doing things like that. So I think
when you say you've been lots of times, is it like a kind of a regular, like we go once every 2 years or
yeah,
we go
basically I went like once a year. I would go for like the whole summer or like
that's
a month
amazing.
Or two.
Do you
yeah.
speak Japanese?
Mm-hmm.
That's great.
Yeah. And
number
and so,
one language I wish I could just easily
really
like know. Yeah.
What, do you know any other languages?
And just French and
oh.
a little bit of
See,
Spanish.
That's so cool. Like,
I know,
I
like,
wish
well,
I knew
on.
French.
I don't know. I
know.
Feel like it's I feel
oh, you don't
I,
have.
I think it feels like those the languages that are so far removed where, you know, with French, I feel like even an American can look at written French and be like, I can take a pretty good guess on what that says, you know?
Know,
versus like Japanese is characters and just it, there's no sort of like link for me where I can go, oh,
oh right.
well, let me, you know, in Spanish, the word is this, in yeah. English, the word is this, and in French, the word is this. They're not that different from each other, you know?
Yeah.
It's just a totally different thing. And it's such a beautiful language.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
It's very musical to me in a way that other Asian languages, and again, this is a very untrained ear, but mm-hmm. that's the experience that I, just as me, feel like I had.
I've always wondered what Japanese sounds like to someone who doesn't understand it, because I
You've
agree.
Never
I,
not understood yeah. it. Yeah.
I think I like the way it sounds too, so that's interesting that you say that.
I think it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. Has that ever come in handy for you with work? Have you ever been...
No.
I foresee that in your future.
I
foresee you being in like a movie where you're going back and forth between Japanese and
oh
English.
Yeah, that would be cool. I remember I've had a couple auditions for like character roles where it'd be like a Japanese girl who's like, and they always write, or the things that I've auditioned for, those characters have been written like very like broadly, but it's like, but it's pretty fun to play that too. and I've always wanted to, so I hope like one day I get to play like...
Do you feel like you're channeling your family? Like you have, and you sort of have the, you're like, I get to make fun of this because this is my family, you guys. And this is like a certain quality that my family has.
Right? I've never looked at it like that. I just think that like Japanese girls are funny. And like, I like taking that on. I guess it's different than who I am. So, yeah.
Do you have, do you feel any draw towards the sort of Harajuku or the kind of like, so like it, going there and seeing, I mean, and by the way, I'm saying this as someone who kind of is like, apparently I would still like to wear like a very frilly dress that has yeah. like six petticoats underneath it, because I'm looking at this girl going like, you look great.
Oh, you have no idea. Every time I go to Japan, I end up buying like at least like a few pieces of clothing that as soon as I come back to LA, I'm just like, what I can't am I fucking gonna do wear with this?
Yes.
Like, why did I waste my money on this?
Yes. Yeah. I love getting swept up and stuff like that. But it's just true. I come back and I'm like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to.
When you're there, it puts you in like a totally, I mean, obviously different setting. And then I think that I'll be able to like make it translate here. I'll be like, I'm just like a little quirky walking down the street, and then and then I'm like, no, I don't have the guts to do this in LA. Like, I think I have to be in Harajuku.
I really hear you.
Yeah.
Okay. I had a feeling I was going to want to start the MASH game early, because I was like, I probably have a lot of questions for her within the context of the game. Okay, let's do. Well, remember when I said I wish I could just download in my mind no Japanese just tomorrow? Mm. Give me three skills that you wish you could wake up tomorrow and you've just like your brain has just downloaded, kind of like in the Matrix.
Okay. I just took up surfing like in the last couple years, but I would love to be like just pro level at that. That would be amazing.
That's something that seems like it takes patience that I'm afraid I wouldn't have, which is kind of a bummer.
So much patience. Yeah, especially for someone like myself, I didn't grow up like near the beach or anything, so like learning every aspect of it, like about the water and the
what
ocean.
Drew you to it, what made you think like
I don't even know
this?
It's something I always wanted to do, but because like my, like most people who grow up surfing like learn from their parents, but since my parents like didn't, and I don't know, I didn't have any friends who did, like I remember like looking into like lessons in high school, and like I was like, oh, this is so expensive, like I can't do this. And then finally like I established myself, and or I'm not established, but like my career like settled to the degree where I was like, oh, I can like take up this hobby and like spend some money and like learn how to do this. And it's just been like so like eye-opening and exhilarating in like so many ways. I
so
just
great.
Love it. Yeah.
I feel like I do have an awe of the ocean that is tipped too far into fear, where I am kind of like, I don't know if I belong here.
I have those moments too. I actually went out today to near Manhattan Beach, the waves, you know, from the shore, they look like pretty friendly, and then you paddle into them and you're like, oh fuck, they're huge. So yeah, I still have days of like that where I'm like, oh my god, like I don't know if I should be out here, blah blah blah. It's all about, I guess, like baby steps, like getting more and more comfortable. And
that's great. Okay, surfing,
okay,
and then
two more. Well, I did ballet growing up. I'd love to be like amazing at that too, to
nice,
be able to
too.
Like do like 42 fouettes or something. And actually, I think it'd be really cool to be able to play guitar really well. So I'll
great.
Say that. Yeah.
Great, great, great. Okay. All right. Let me get this classic MASH out of the way, which is your alternate universe. Could be boyfriend, could be husband, could be like, you could just name one person that you're like, I mean, I just want to have sex with them whenever I wanted to, but I wouldn't want to be in a relationship.
Okay.
So you have the control over like who it is, and then also what that relationship looks like if you want. And it can be anyone. It could be character. It could be someone from a book.
So I have
could
to
be
say,
just a character that someone plays. You know, it can be like Ryan Gosling, or you can be like just Ryan Gosling in The Notebook or whatever.
Oh, okay. So I have to say who it is and what I want to do with them.
You don't have to say what you want to do with them unless you would like me to know that. Do you know what I mean? Like, you could just like if you love Ryan Gosling, you love Ryan Gosling. My assumption is going to be like that's your alternate universe relationship. But like there may be somewhere where you're like, look, I just want to fuck the character of blah blah blah.
Okay,
but I don't want to like make him dinner.
I'm afraid that my parents will listen to this.
I really apologize.
Okay, it's okay. Just
to your parents,
mom and dad, fast forward through this part if you find this podcast. Tom Hardy, I would, great. Yeah, I would, you know, whatever, a few hours in the sack sounds fine. And oh God, who else? This sounds terrible and I hate this about myself, but I love male models. Like, I just think they're so hot and beautiful. Yeah. And there's this one named Miles McMillan who is actually gay. But if he was straight, I would marry him and have his babies and live happily ever after.
Right.
And then, oh my God, I'm blanking on his name, but he's like the grandson of like a pro surfer and he's also a musician. His last name's McNamara. So let's put that down.
Okay. We're just going to call him McNamara.
I'm open to anything with him.
Okay,
so.
Great. I love it. I love how easily those answers came to you. It's very satisfying. Okay. Since you love doing characters and stuff, let's do the idea of you sort of getting to step inside the body of someone else for a day. And it can be, again, anyone. It can be anyone from history. Wow. It can be anyone just kind of like to sort of experience what life is like as a different person.
Whoa. I think it'd be really cool to be Kelly Slater for a day. Because, damn, yeah, he can just... He's so awesome. And then who else would I want to be for a day? Why? I've never thought about this. Rihanna. That would be so cool. But I want to like perform as her too, not like a random day.
We'll
like she has to be on tour. Yeah.
Nice.
And then I would want to be like, oh my God, like maybe like Gisele Bündchen or just like the most beautiful woman and like see how different people treat me.
That might be very eye-opening, and I don't mean... I mean, listen, no one's saying, like, they probably have it really hard. But, like, it might be eye-opening because, it might be like, oh, this person is a lot meaner to me than I would have expected. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm so curious because I pick up on that a lot, like, between girls, you know? There's, like, a lot of, like... I don't know, cattiness that goes on.
I know,
so
I wish
yeah,
there were less.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, next category will be... Let's do three movies that you can step inside, and it's not that you're a character in the movie, it's that you get to just like hang out in that world with those characters as long as you want, but it's not like you're completing the plot. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So you could go be at Hogwarts and hang out with all the freaks, or, you know, but you're not like Hermione, you're just you.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
That's
the most I've ever explained that very popular question.
I love that question.
Okay, good.
The first thing that comes to mind is Sicario.
Okay, great.
Because I love all those like drug trafficking movies, like being like
the gritty,
secret agent
tough
or
truth.
Something. Yeah, I love that. And then, oh man. Why is this so difficult?
Totoro.
Is.
By the way, you're answering a lot faster than most people. So
good.
The fact that you think this is difficult, usually. And I say this with all love for previous guests, but typically, and this is how I am too, because sometimes people play this with me when I do their podcasts because they know I do it on mine and they want to get back at me, rightly so, because someone will say something and I'll be like, wow, you can edit out these pauses, right?
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is hard. Oh, and then you just immediately come up with someone great. What did you just say? Did you say
I said Sicario and then I said... Totoro, which is an animated Japanese film with like really fuzzy characters in it.
Wonderful.
And then,
Do you like anime? That's a huge thing in Japan. Is that something that you?
Yeah, I like Miyazaki.
Too, yeah,
I'm not like super super entrenched in it or anything or like an expert by any means. But I like his movies. Yeah,
nice.
Yeah. And then, oh my gosh, this is such a good question, though. Any movie. Oh, like
like Gangs of New York.
Great.
Like, I want to know what mm-hmm. it's like to be alive in that time
I
period.
Really, really get that. I spent a really long time talking about that with someone recently. It was not on the podcast, but I really went off on sort of this like idea of cities that we, because we just don't have that same experience with history the way someone who lives in Paris or someone who lives in Tokyo or someone like places that have just been around for ever.
Yeah.
And so even just the turn, like, oh, 1900s New York is so fascinating to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Gangs of New York. Love it. Okay, let's do, see, I'm taking longer to come up with the categories than you are taking. Let's do time travel. Let's can visit and witness, since we just talked about that with Gangs of New York, places and times that you would like to see. You're not in danger, so nothing bad's going to happen. You can just see it almost in a safety bubble.
Whoa. I want
to be future, too.
I want to go to Hawaii, like, before it was colonized.
Nice.
That would be cool.
I've been listening to this podcast called Offshore. It's called Offshore, mm-hmm. and it's actually kind of a bummer because it's exploring racial tension in Hawaii, covering a really interesting case about a visiting FBI agent who was off duty and got into an altercation with a local who, mm-hmm. and they'd both been drinking, and he ended up shooting the local. And it's been a huge deal because there's so much tension about this idea of sort of like Caucasian dominance and this
kind of racism over there, and
I guess on both sides, a sort of like predilection for local natives to sort of look askance because of that history, and then that, and then also people coming in being like, oh yeah, you might get into a scruffle with like this person. And so it just keeps, and so it's been really interesting but it's also heartbreaking because you do kind of want to think of Hawaii as this great melting pot. In a lot of ways it is. In a lot of ways it has tremendous problems and it's such a young state and is like, you know, it just wasn't that long ago that some white person killed their queen. You know what I mean? Like, it's just a problem.
Exactly.
But anyway,
I was surprised by that last time I went over there, and I didn't even know that they have I think it's called an anti-Hawley day, which Hawley stands for white people.
Yep.
And it's like, people literally just like bully white people for the day. Yeah. And it's like everyone knows about it. I was so shocked. But anyways,
they totally mentioned that on the podcast.
Oh, they do.
So if anyone's interested, it's like, now I'm sucked in. It feels necessary to listen to. But I love Hawaii and I look the way I do. And I hate the idea of showing up and being like, here's my money. Here's my mainlander money. You know?
No, I think as long as you like respect them, I think that's what they're really looking for.
Yeah.
Is like for people to respect them and not just
and that's actually a really interesting point about the podcast too. And then I'll move on is this idea, which I found very interesting. And my only personal experience with it is, and I've said it ad nauseum on the podcast, but like the grade schools that I went to, whites were absolutely a minority and we would get teased and bullied. But I'm just I'm comfortable with that because that's what I kind of grew up around.
Yeah.
But I think what happens to a lot of white people in Hawaii is they get bullied or they experience racism the way many people of color experience racism in the United States, and they feel they don't know how to handle it. Like, they're like, I can't believe you're treated this way because of the color of my skin.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the rest of Hawaii is like, I mean, welcome to how it is for most people who aren't white in the rest of America. Like, that's just what, you know, you're just a minority here. Like, most people are a minority in this culture. It's such a melting pot that there aren't that many, like, this is the one predominant culture that, you know, is in charge of everything. And so this idea of like the fact that it feels worse somehow to a white person who hasn't experienced that. Whereas somebody who has experienced that is like,
Yeah.
People give me shit because I'm black, or people give me shit because I'm Asian, or people that was that part of me was like, yeah, you know what? I'm totally comfortable going there and being called a Hawley as long as someone isn't, you know, hurtful towards me. If it's sort of in jest, but it's also like representative of like, yeah, this is, look, that's this has been our experience.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of have to at least acknowledge that the only reason you're here is for the same reason that we're calling you this. I guess I'm okay with it. I'm not going to be like, no, you wait a minute. You know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, you better not. Yeah, I know.
But I mean, you know what I'm saying? This sort of like,
yeah,
how dare you?
Yeah,
is like,
I
yeah,
see.
How dare any of us?
Right.
How yeah. dare any of us? You know,
that's a really good
anyway,
point.
Hawaii, I really went deep on that one.
Okay.
Hawaii pre-colonization.
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe like 1700s or something.
Great. Love it.
And then I want to be in France, like around like, you know, King Louis the 14th.
Yeah.
Like when they're like
have
doing
you been watching
well.
Versailles?
No.
It's another interesting.
Okay, got it.
It's a really good
out.
Show, yeah.
Yeah.
I watch too much television, clearly.
I don't watch
I like
enough.
Being at home a lot. I'm fascinated with the French culture and,
yeah.
and I totally inherited that from my mom and that's it's a really it's quite good. It's Louis XIV. It's him building Versailles.
Oh,
and this idea of like all of our sort of French fashion and etiquette and food, all of that stuff is how we're going to lead the world. We can't expect to do it just with like the military. And it's interesting how much that sort of perpetuated itself. Like, oh, he really started something. Like he really like there are echoes of that to this day. People talk about, you know, French culture and French food,
yeah.
but they're not talking about, you know, the French Navy or, you know.
Right.
Anyway.
I mean, I'm kind of weird because like that stuff is cool too. It's interesting. But I'm also really interested in just like the I always wonder about like the hygiene of that day. like stuff
yeah.
like that. I'm just like, what was like, I don't know. What did people smell like?
Dude,
like,
no, totally.
I just wonder about that kind
no,
of thing.
No, totally. There's
like, what did they do with their leftovers?
I was
like,
just,
I don't know.
Absolutely. I was just listening. I was re-listening to, I read it as a book and then,
yeah.
And I'm now I was listening, re-listening to it as an audiobook, the book, The Devil in the White City, which is about the Chicago World's Fair. And, and the description of like Chicago in that time period,
yeah.
there was just like a ranches and slaughterhouses in the middle of town. And so there's just the smell of, you know, when you're driving from San Francisco to LA and you smell that slaughterhouse smell, that's what like all of Chicago smelled
wow.
like. Just imagine wearing like a beautiful fancy dress with a bustle that's dragging through horse shit on the ground and going into like
yeah,
a hat
disgusting.
Store and you're smelling the smell of slaughtered
yeah.
animals. I mean, it's mind blowing.
Wow. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's,
so
that's,
agreed
wanna,
on the hygiene
I wanna,
thing.
I want to experience
and that's what,
it.
And that's what they talk about on Louis XIV.
Yeah.
In Versailles, there was not very many bathrooms. So people would just go behind like a partition and just go to the bathroom.
Yeah,
and yet they're wearing this regality.
Yeah.
It's such high meets low. You're like,
blows
whoa.
My mind.
Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Okay.
Okay, love it. Hawaii. Okay, okay. France, great.
And then, gosh, this is, yeah. Oh, and then, oh, no, wait. I want to pick something else. I'm literally like imagining like a map of the world and like
I love
where
it.
I want to be.
You're making a little red Indiana like, Jones line with
yeah.
a little plane. Where am I flying?
Oh, and then, yeah, I mean, this is pretty obvious maybe, but like Egypt, like around the time of the pharaohs
sure.
and all that. That'd be
I want
really
that.
Cool.
I want to see
you know?
How that stuff
I
wanna happened.
See it. I want to see it. I want to know how they built the pyramids.
Absolutely. There's a reason that's stayed a fascinating mystery for centuries, you know?
Yeah.
Great. Okay. Final category. A lot of pressure here. A lot of pressure.
Okay. A lot of pressure. I'm feeling it.
Let's go. I'm trying to think of some of the ones that that listeners send in sometimes. I feel like I just had a really good one. I've completely forgotten it. Let me thumb through here to see if I can find any old ones. Look at how worn and weathered
wow.
these are.
How long have you been doing this podcast?
A few years, I guess. This
Whoa.
Is like, I'm in the 220s, I guess,
oh
now.
Oh, my God.
So, let me just see this. Oh, this is cute. It's very this is cute, and it's sort of lower stakes, but
okay.
this is from one of my listeners, Nick. This is a question that dates back to October of 2015. This is the I'm game question. You have the ability to, at the snap of your fingers, make people interested in playing three games with you. So we talk about this idea of MASH here, and now within MASH, we're doing a game within a game. It's very Inception.
Three games?
Yeah. Is there anything that you sort of like would just be really fun, especially if you're with people that you're like, oh my God, these are my heroes, and now I'm going to play charades with them or something like that?
Oh, okay, I've already
or could
talked,
be like a sport too if you wanted.
Yeah, I mean, I've already talked about surfing so much, but
yeah.
for me, like the funnest thing ever is just like be in the water with my friends.
Great.
And so if I could do that with like, you know, Seth Rogen, that'd probably
yeah.
be really fun.
Awesome. Great. Perfect answer.
And let's see here. What else?
I want to do like a makeup party with like Kylie Jenner.
Oh, that's great.
That would be fun. And this is like the most obvious thing. I'm just trying to think of who I would want to cook for me. I feel like it'd be really awesome to have like a cooking party with some amazing chef.
Yeah.
I just pick like Wolfgang Puck for the hell of it.
Love it.
Spago's pretty good.
He is a legend.
Yeah.
Okay, great. All right, and this is the last part where you tell me when to stop, and then I do a little non-math, and I give you your 100% guaranteed MASH future.
Okay, wait, what do you mean?
I'm going to start doing something, but then, like, you basically just tell me when to stop. It doesn't have to be for very long.
Okay. So at any point, stop.
Okay. We just made, like, really intense eye contact for a second before. Okay, I'm going to pause this. I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to announce the results.
Okay.
All right, I have what I feel is very good news for you.
Oh, cool.
Let me see where to start here. First of all, let me go ahead. Now, listen, it gets a little confusing. As you know, MASH stands for Mansion, Apartment, Shack, and House. So you ended up with an apartment in Fiji? I'm not sure exactly.
Oh, that's so great news.
I guess you're, you know, I mean.
That probably means I have a house in L.A. Yeah. And I have the apartment in Fiji. Yeah, you
got your apartment in Fiji. So it might not be right on the beach, but actually maybe it is. I've never been to Fiji.
I think it is.
Okay, great.
Yeah, I think it's on like it stilts or something. Yeah.
It is on the beach. It's an apartment on stilts. 100%. Right there. At the water. I want to congratulate you on even though you're all the way in Fiji, this can certainly happen here in LA, but also when you're in Fiji, you can have Wolfgang Puck come over and just like cook you up a meal. Here it is, right in front of you. Awesome. Beautiful. So that's fantastic. And then you also can have the Smiths play for you wherever.
Great.
Pretty nice. I'll tell you who's going to enjoy that is your boyfriend, Miles McMillan. Ash, your husband. That was the most girlish, best response ever.
Best news ever.
You definitely got him.
I love him.
You got him. You can work some of your ballet moves on him.
Okay.
Your beautiful, graceful ballet moves. When you guys want a little adventure, I want to reassure you that you can jump into the movie Sicario.
Oh my god.
You can visit ancient Egypt to see how the pyramids are built.
Sweet.
And maybe he won't mind if for a minute you step away and become Kelly Slater just for a day. Fantastic.
Wow.
Some really, really good outcomes. I'm very happy that you're so pleased with your alternate universe husband.
I can't imagine it being any better.
It's
honestly
pretty great.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. Yeah. Nicole, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
We already talked about Superstore, but it's on NBC. And when is it airing?
We come back in January. Nice. I'm ashamed that I don't know the date, but we're on Thursday nights on NBC at 8 p.m.
Thursday nights on NBC, coming back in January. And they can catch up
on Hulu, NBC.com. Great. For the first season. And we're halfway through the second. So
great.
Yeah.
Awesome. And are you on Twitter and stuff?
I am. I'm on Twitter, Instagram.
Or are you just at Nicole Bloom with an H?
Probably. Just like search for it, I guess. I don't know.
Give it
know.
A Google.
I don't know.
Google,
yeah.
That's what search engines are for.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Thank you so much. And I'll talk to you next time on the podcast. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.